All right, we're going. This is it.
We're live.
We're live. We are actually truly live. We're not just streaming it as if it were live, which is, let me tell you, 10 times easier for me. You know, as long as we make sure to actually talk into the mic, I don't have to do any, like, audio correction. And it's just, I think it's a lot better product, too. So just in terms of getting people to be able to listen and be able to interact. So I think we'll have some people call in and ask some questions with regards to training and sort of technique and technique training and sort of staying healthy and sort of staying fit from two brown belts. So people, don't be shy to give us a call, 916-634-9978, or you can call Pedro on his cell and we'll take your questions. And we'll take your questions as they come in. Pedro, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is Pedro Silva and I'm 28 years old. I've been grappling since I was 20. So I was actually 19. And I moved here from Sao Paulo, Brazil when I was 10 or 11. And, yeah, I've moved here and, you know, grew up in Sacramento around the same area that I've been living since I first moved here. And, you know, I'm just kind of a product of this general area. You know, went to public school here and just made the most of it.
Yeah, yeah. So you, I would have never known this from you. Just you have no accent or anything. But you, you were brought from Brazil at a very young age.
Yeah. I was.
Hey, can you do me a favor and just move the mic up? Either, yeah, it'll either move like that. Yeah, that. Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah. Okay. No, that's perfect.
Well, you know, I came here when I was 10 and I shortly turned 11 and it was kind of a tough transition. I was going into fifth grade and I remember fifth grade being super tough, super tough. I didn't speak a lick of English. And, you know, I ended up having my own personal ASL teacher that came to my school, Pony Express, because we didn't have an ASL teacher. So for that first fifth grade year, I had my own personal, like, private lessons, you know, all the time with this lady, Miss Wong. And, I mean, at the time, she could hardly, you know, her English wasn't that well either, wasn't that good either, but...
Shit, you guys were both learning together.
Exactly, exactly. We both kind of, like, bounced back
Miss
on
Wong,
each other.
Miss Wong, help me get this shit white.
Exactly, exactly. And she was like, hey.
It's probably not funny, actually.
But it is what it is. Wherever she's at, Miss Wong.
Miss Wong, thank you.
Thank you. You don't
want. Thank you, Miss Wong.
Yep.
Miss Wong. You know, it's so funny. Dude, those teachers can make such a lasting impression in the minds and lives of children. You know, a quick shout out to Mr. Sample. He was like, I don't know if you ever saw like Boy Meets World.
Like, it's an older show, right?
Yeah, it's an older
show. Yeah.
Yeah. And, dude, he was like my Mr. Feeney. He was like a mentor to me. He taught like U.S. history, world history, art history, English literature. But he would just tell you kind of what to read and you would kind of read it on your own. Then he'd come around and talk to you at the end, you know, be like, well, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? You know, but he knew all this stuff. He just kind of knew all this stuff, you know. He had this rule at the first day and the last day of school, you could ask him anything you wanted and he'll answer.
What kind of questions would he get?
Anything. Dude, he'd get crazy questions, man. He's... You know, these high school kids have no respect.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So he's getting crazy fucking questions. And, he, you know, I asked him one time, hey, you know, Mr. Sample, what's up with the beard? We'd never seen him without a beard, right? In the 4 years that I was with him, I'd never seen him without a thick beard. He was saying he was riding his bike downhill in the dark one day. And it just so happened that someone was riding their bike uphill and they didn't have a light either. So they didn't see each other. And so they, like, head-on collided with each other, and Mr. Sample's face was plastered onto the top of the other guy's helmet, and they had to, like, peel his fucking face off the other guy's helmet, and he had to have major – they had to put his eyeballs back into the sockets.
Damn.
Yeah. And, you know, aside from having crazy scars, like, up and down, like, his jawline, you would have never known that happened.
The beer just covered it
up.
So
the beer just covered it up, and that was his – That was his sort of keeping it real with the kids, you know.
Very strategic.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, look at this. We're getting some love here.
Hey. What up?
Quick shout out.
I love the hearts. Quick shout out to my dog Julio. I see it from here, I think. Is that who it is? I see someone standing on a Facebook picture.
Yeah, Julio and Paige giving you hearts,
hey,
man.
You guys, thanks, guys.
Hearts back.
We're out here. We're out
we
here.
Out here.
Sacktown, Smackdown. Bruh, bruh, bruh.
Guys, don't be afraid to call us with your questions on training and technique. It's 916-634-9978. Pedro, your boy Pedro Silva here is here to keep it real and let you know what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong.
And I definitely don't know everything. You know, it's like I would say like those best teachers that we learned a lot from, at least for me, the better teachers that I learned a lot from, they always told me they're even though they knew a shitload of stuff, they would always be like, you know, you need another instructor to teach you other things because I only know so much. You know, and it guided me to seek more knowledge. And I think that was a lasting impression that I got from a lot of my teachers.
Yeah, can we talk about that for a second? It's just, you know, like one of the things that I appreciate the most, too, about my, you know, my in particular, like some instructors that I've had more like in the high school kind of college type of sense. You ask them a question, they'll be like, well, you know, that particular question, no right answer, you know, whether it's like a question of like it's like a subjective type of matter. Or it's like, what do you think about this? Well, it's like, you know, some things there's no right answer to. This is like life stuff, not like jujitsu stuff, right? There's usually right answers for jujitsu. Although even in some cases, you get to positions in the technique tree where it's like, you could kind of go either way depending on your style.
Sure.
Oh, look at this. Looks like we got a caller. What is up? You're on live with Pedro Silva, Life in Jujitsu.
Hey, Pedro. It's Loman.
Hey, Loman.
Bigger than me. I just want to ask, like, what do you think I have to focus on in order to, you know, hold my ground against bigger and stronger opponents?
Okay. So the question there is, what do you do as a smaller guy when pretty much everyone's bigger and stronger than you? Sorry about that. Hey, brother, I just hung up on you too. Sorry about that.
Loman, I hope you're still listening, man.
Yeah, Loman, I just hung up on you. I didn't mean to. I just got kind of nervous. So the question is, if you're a smaller guy, everyone's bigger and stronger than you, how do you keep, you know, how do you adjust?
I think it's about learning how to create the distance and how to work that distance. So for me specifically is using my feet on their hips a lot or on their arms for spider guard type positions. Again, it's just controlling that distance really well. So they're not ever as close as they want to be towards me because that is a huge amount of weight. And I mean, I just... you know, jiu-jitsu is about efficiency, and I won't be very efficient if I have a load of weight on top of me, right? But if I can keep that load of weight away from me and work my way around it, then, you know, that would be a lot better way to deal with that. But this is not something that I came up with myself. You know, it's taken multiple teachers showing me. You know, one of my great friends, Ryan Wagner, would always talk about when you're going head-on with something, you know, it's like you're going towards a brick wall. It's like try to walk around it maybe, see if there's another opening, because sometimes going straight forward is not the only way through.
All right,
so
we got
just
another
managing distance.
We got another one coming in here.
Oh, we got another call. We're getting popular today. Hold on just a second. Yo, yo. Hey, are you live? Can you hear me?
Yeah, put that up to the microphone.
Cool. All right, well, yeah, I can hear you totally fine. You're live, okay?
Oh, right on. Cool. Well, I just got a question for you. Out of all the places you've trained and traveled to, which place would you say was the most memorable, most interesting?
Well, I think that's because there's different reasons why I like different gyms and different reasons why certain gyms are more memorable than others. But I would say to me, the mecca of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to me was PMA, Pacific Martial Arts in Fresno. You know, it's you know, that's where you train. It's a Blackstone. You know, it's at a huge tennis club. And
do me a favor, let them go and then just talk it.
All right, so I'm gonna answer this online. So I'll see you in a second. So, what was the question again? The most
memorable
places we trained.
Yeah.
Man. You know what? Actually, there you go.
I'll tell you what. I got one for you.
Go ahead. You go first.
Yeah. My buddy Ryan Johnson. Shout out to Ryan Johnson. He's actually, dude, he's in the Navy right now. He's doing the Navy officer school and medical school at the same time. He's a super baller. Yeah. But he and I decided to go out to Ralph Gracie in San Francisco one day. And they fucking smoked us, man. They fucking smoked us. They put us through like the most insane warm up like ever, and then they had a spar like all through like brown and black belts. We were like blue belts at the time. We were struggling, but you know what? They got their point across, right? Like you're gonna drop in. You're gonna be ready. You're gonna drop in. Be ready. You know, and that like Ryan sent me a message the next day. He was like, dude, I can barely walk. You know, they put us through literally like the most insane, like hazing style warm up, you know,
but, a lot of area there too. Right. So,
Yeah, yeah.
Utilize it.
Yeah, yeah. The warm dude, the brown and black belts that were there, they didn't even do the warm up. They just saw us doing it, and they're like getting ready to go Shark Tank on us, you know. But I'm convinced that made me better.
Their eyes are all glazed as they're looking at you. Like, mouth is watering.
Yeah.
Good times.
How about you? You said Pacific Martial Arts.
Well, I would say that's the mecca of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to me. That's my favorite place to train at. But the most memorable place I've ever went to was last time I was in Brazil when I was 23. I went to this De La Riva school, and it was like in an underground garage where you would just drive up. And we got another call real fast, so hold on just a second. Yo, you're live, but hold on just a second, okay? So, yeah, and we were just training in this underground garage that was, like, raised by pillars. And it was, like, outside, you know what I mean? So it just seemed that how just deep that jiu-jitsu culture is. It's, like, you basically go, like, it's almost in the slums in this garage downstairs with just, like, block mats, you know what I mean? And once everybody's done, you put the mats away, and it's, like, oh, this is just a garage. You know what I mean? I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, let me do a couple quick shout-outs to the Arena MMA. Which is an amazing place to train. Also, Bali MMA. Haley and I went across the world and did a MMA camp. All right, let's get to the next question here.
Yo, still on? You still here? All right, hold on just a second. Let me put you on.
We're doing it low tech, guys. I couldn't figure out how to get the call into the box, but we'll get that ready for next week.
All right, you're live on Life in Jiu-Jitsu. Who's this?
This is Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
What's up, bro?
What's up, big dog? Go ahead.
I want to pick your brain. So I got a lot of tournaments, big tournaments, Cobb Worlds, Pan Ams, all that good stuff. So what aspect of your training regimen would you say, you know, you take as your most important that gets you prepared for that kind of warfare?
Okay, so the question is, what aspect of training gets you prepared for war, for a tournament, right? Let's take that offline.
Now I'm going to take you offline, and we're going to answer your question on live, okay? Cool.
So again, the question is, how do you get ready for a big tournament? How do you prepare for war? I'm gonna not even chime into this one because I've had a bad competition record in the recent past. So I'm gonna let you take this one.
Well, I mean, I've also had bad competition track too. You know, I've lost a lot, but I think that's what it is. Is just
you won your last bout at Fight to Win.
Yeah, yes, I did.
And that was not close. That was not a close fight.
Yeah, maybe.
That was not a close fight. Okay, so go ahead.
No, but I think it's just, you know, it's learning from all your losses. And, you know, you have to train, but you have to train really smart. You have to be super efficient with your training. You can't just train every day, all the time, because you're going to break your body down. And sometimes the only thing worse than not training enough is overtraining. You're not giving yourself enough time to recover so you can actually go out there and implement your techniques. So as more of recently, that's some of the things that I've done. You know, I'm super just anal about doing my little weird ass workouts, my movement workouts, you know, and that's something that I do every day. It's like, even if I don't train, I do my movement workouts, you know, and I implement it with a little bit of weightlifting, not a lot of heavy weights, but a little bit, because it helps, you know. It's not really for right now, but it's like, well, further along the road, you know what I mean? Because if you think about it, the younger you are or the older you are, the more you have to gain from like endurance training or weight training. Just because, you know, you need that musculature. Right now, it's probably not, you know, it doesn't do a lot, but it helps a little bit. It just complements everything else. So I would say the little bit of strength training, a little bit of yoga or any kind of stretches that you can do, some training and drilling, of course. And I think eating well is really important too. You know, it's like I've been living at home with my adoptive family for a little while now, since I was about 14. And dude, I always have home cooked meals. And I think that goes a long way too, because you have to have the right fuel to go. And that's not just being like, oh, just protein, you know. It's like, no, you have to have everything.
Well, yeah, can we talk about that a little bit? Because, I see you with your gi top off. Not a lot of fat on you, right? And so I think that's, you know, just in terms of just conditioning the body, you know, just very straightforward stuff. You know, in weight class-based competition, right, you got to take an honest look at your body and say, hey, you know, for my size and for my frame, am I competitive for what I'm weighing in at?
For sure.
You know, and you know, a guy like you and Mikey, you guys are very lean, very muscular, and very like very very light for how big your frame is.
Sure, right? Like Mikey probably has less body fat percentage than me, probably like 5 or 6. Yeah, like I'm like a 7%, but yeah.
Yeah, a guy like me, you know, like I mean, even just sitting down, I got a little bit of a belly, and I've probably got like a good, you know, like 10 pounds of body fat on me that if I'm going to get really competitive, I got to be honest with myself and be like, you know what, you got a little bit of a tire on you, Gibran, you know? And so I think for, you know, I think 90% of jiu-jitsu competitions, especially in the gi, purple belt and below, you know, especially the regional circuits, it's really going to be about who has the better jiu-jitsu. But if you're going into war, if you're going into like purple belt, brown belt, black belt, like high level competition, you got to be real honest about your body.
And I think that goes back to the last question he asked. Exactly. Very, very well put.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, guys. Again, it's 916-634-9978. We're going live with Pedro. Do you got a nickname?
Well, I have several nicknames. I got Lungs of Steel, Ice Kubo, Dodoy.
Ice Kubo?
Yep, Ice Kubo. It's like Ice Cube, but
it's like
with
a Mexican
Kubo.
Ice Cube.
Yep.
I've never had a nickname stick.
Yeah, I've had too many nicknames stick, and I just try to fight my way out of every one of them. You know,
really?
It's like they'll give me some lame ass nickname. I was like, no, this one can't stick. So I just try to beat everybody up that gave me that nickname, and eventually they kind of forget.
Oh, that's
except
so
for
funny.
The people that totally troll me, and then those nicknames always stick.
Let me take a minute here to do a couple quick shout outs. Folks are giving you some love, dude. You're popular, man.
Well, I think it goes back to what we were talking about. You know, it's just about being very political and just harvesting and taking care of these, like, what is it called? You know, all
relationships.
Exactly, exactly. Taking care, harnessing these relationships and taking care of them and cultivating the relationships. Again, jiu-jitsu is just, you know, it's a game. I think only we that really care about jiu-jitsu are into this type of stuff. But it's like, if you don't care about jiu-jitsu, you know, I mean nothing. And it's like, well, at least if I'm a nice person, you know, people will, you know, they'll resonate with me and they'll gravitate towards me. And it's not like I've thought about it that way. It's just how I've always been and how I was raised, you know?
Yeah, yeah. A couple quick shout-outs to Manny Moreno, Kevin Schnepp.
That's my dogs, all of them. Manny.
Isaac Morales. Dude, Manny, hey. Let me tell you something about Manny, man. Manny, like, almost put me out, dude. Manny almost put me the fuck out when I first started. We were both at Andre's place.
On 12?
Yeah, on 12. You know, I came in as this, like, crazy, like, brash wrestler, you know, no respect. Like, you know, I was, like, double-leaging, like, the soccer moms that were doing it for hobby. I didn't give a fuck, you know?
Jiu-jitsu.
I learned. You know, I became a good boy over time, right? But Andre would sick Manny on me. You know, I'm so much bigger than Manny, too, right? But, you know, when I was first starting, and Manny knows the collar chokes, you know, he knows.
And he controls that distance really well,
he controls that
too.
Distance really well, you know. You know, he sicked Manny on me one time, and, like, Manny, like, very nearly put me out. Not in a malicious way, but just, like, hey, you just let me know there's levels
and
to this.
He's such a nice dude.
He's the nicest fucking
Yeah,
guy.
I started training
Manny,
a week
you gotta
after
come on
him.
Manny, you got to come on the podcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
Set this up, Manny. Message Life in Jiu-Jitsu right now.
Yeah, I saw him. I sent him a he's busy, dude. He's, like, instructing, and he's got a lot of things going on. Looks like Ari's BJJ just did, like, a night out on the town or something like that.
I saw that the gala. Very cool. Very cool.
That
I think they're
cool.
Setting the trend. You know what I mean?
We should, like, do, like a Sacramento, like, BJJ ballers gala.
That'd be awesome. That'd be really cool. I just think that a lot of the instructors wouldn't get involved because they have, like, such big egos. And it'd be like, oh, I don't know. I just, you know, I'm not into that. But I think that for the practitioners, they would love that.
A couple more quick shout-outs. Anthony Bivens bought me Anthony Bivens bought me a pair of MMA gloves when I didn't have any for my fight.
Hey.
You know, Anthony, I owe you $35. Check is in the mail.
Shout-out to great friends. Bruh, bruh, bruh.
Johnny Go, Spicy Johnny. Who
my
else
dog.
Here? Dude, Johnny's the best. Johnny's the best dude, man. I highly encourage everyone to check out the episode that I had with Johnny. He talked about his group over at UC Davis. They did, like, a study abroad thing, and they accidentally went there, like, in the middle of a fucking political revolution.
I remember seeing that episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. He's Spicy Johnny's seen some crazy shit, and
he's fucking awesome. Dude.
And he's awesome. He's awesome
grappler.
On the mat too. He's awesome on the mat and off the mat. You know, you don't meet too many black belts that are, like, scummy people. I feel like, but if you get that good, it kind of humbles you along the way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You were talking just a second ago about instructors' egos. You want to comment on that?
Well, it's not much to comment about. You know, I think just like we were saying about the whole teachers thing, it's like there are good teachers, there are bad teachers. It just happens that in school, it's been around for so much longer that it kind of weeds out all the, well, some of the really shitty teachers. But it's like jiu-jitsu is fairly new, you know, so people have, like, this rock star complex, like, oh, you know, I don't need to listen to you. You just got to listen to everything I say. And there are different styles of coaching commands. You know, there's, like, you can be a cooperative, you can be submissive. or you can be just, you know, like a dictator, and or the, you know, a mix of all three. And just people are different, but man, just it just, you know, there's a lot of that just in jiu-jitsu period, and even more in MMA. So it's like, if you have a jiu-jitsu school and MMA school, it's like, ah, you know, I just feel like everyone is the same. It's like, whether you're a black belt or brown belt in jiu-jitsu, it doesn't matter. You're still a person. It's like, what, besides jiu-jitsu, what else do you do? What kind of person are you off the mat? You know what I mean?
You know, let me comment on this. I think one of the cultural things that happened with martial arts in general, with the rise of the UFC, is it sort of made everyone sort of check themselves a little bit. And what I mean by that is that, you know, when, especially like karate and like taekwondo, right? These are like karate schools. Like, your sensei was like your sensei for life. You know, he was like a life instructor, right? There's a lot of like prestige and almost like the, like a cult like type of vibe.
It's esoteric almost.
Yeah, exactly. When the UFC came around and they opened these big like fight factory gyms, right? They'd have like a BJJ guy. To have like maybe like a Shotokan karate guy, like a Muay Thai guy, and like an American boxing guy. And it's like, all right, you're no longer like the head sensei, life coach, you know, mentor type of guy. You're our grappling instructor. You are our striking consultant. If we need to do striking, we'll come see about you. But otherwise, like the, you know, if you look at the guys that are running a lot of these MMA schools, they're people that are rounded out in many different areas, you know? And so everyone kind of need to sort of to check themselves a little bit and realize that they're part of this bigger whole, you sure. know? And,
it's like synergistic, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so like the for the folks that are running, you know, traditional BJJ schools, there's still a little bit of, you know, of room for them to not quite give and take like that, you know, because it's just jiu-jitsu. Yeah. It's just my school. I don't want to share my students with anybody, you know. I just saw, and you know what, you know, folks, feel free to talk about this in the comments too.
Call us, talk to us. Yeah, tell us what you think.
Oh, Johnny Ghost says dictator's the way to go.
Nah, bro.
I know Johnny doesn't mean that.
Hell yeah.
Nah.
But you know, I just saw a thing online, like Hickson. I think it was Hickson Gracie, one of these Gracie guys. Like put out a video, or it was like a part of an interview, and he was just like, don't cross train. Like, don't go to other people's schools. Don't go learn new techniques from new people. It's like, what the fuck, man? He's like, well, you know, when you compete, whose flag are you going to represent? Well, my main instructor.
Well, in jiu-jitsu, you know? Right? It's like, fuck that. It's like, you know, I think people get so caught up on the whole loyalty and like the crayon chi thing. And it's like, dude, you want me to be straight up? It's like, I remember when I was 6 years old having asthma attacks and my mom would give me a piggyback ride to the fucking hospital. It's like, I'm loyal to that shit. You know what I mean? If you're just making me do some shit and like, oh, do this, making me like bust my back for you, and you're really not that worried about my well-being, it's like, why should I have any loyalty to you? It doesn't make any sense.
No,
it doesn't make any sense. This is an army, you know
that's
what
like
I mean?
That's like an old world model. That's like an old world view of sort of like, you know, and it's directly tied to people who feel that their students are really just like their ATM.
Right, and I mean, and if you're an awesome instructor, people will resonate with you. People will love you. You know what I mean? If you look at the best instructors, it's like they don't have to worry about people going anywhere. People will go and they're going to come back. They know who they're
right.
Who
it's like what you were saying earlier. If you're an awesome instructor, you say, you know what? Go do a week across the street. You know, you're gonna absorb their best techniques and bring them back here.
Yep.
The Romans, you know, that's one of the things that made the Roman Empire, you know, what it was they wouldn't go, you know, when they conquered new land, they wouldn't kill everybody, you know?
Taking some slaves, right?
No, they would kill. I think they would kill like who needed to be killed. But to the rest of them, they were like, "Guess what? You are now all Romans." You know,
very cool.
Here's a toga. You know, here's a toga. Here's the funny language you speak now. Let's fucking do this thing. You know, you are now all Romans. Very and everyone's cool. Like, "Cool, hey, I thought they were gonna kill us. We're Romans. All right, let's do this. Toga. You know, kind of like absorbing what is useful. And leaving behind what is not, right? I think that's also like a sign of insecurity. Why are you going over there? You like it better over there, you know? It's like a almost like a jealous girlfriend.
It's weird. Yeah, it's very weird.
It's very weird.
But it has no place. I really in you I know right now it's too, cool because yeah. It just started. Jiu-jitsu is fairly new, you know. But yeah, it head along the road, it has no place. And I'm sorry, people that are like that, they're not gonna last longer, you know. And that's really well. That's just how I think, you know, and what I feel. But I might be wrong. I think that if you are like that, though, you're not gonna be around for that much longer.
Yeah. No. It's crazy, man. Like, you where do you see jiu-jitsu going in like 10 years? You think there's a lot more like cross training? Do you think there's still butt scooting? Like, what do you think changes about jiu-jitsu in 10 years? What do you think doesn't change about jiu-jitsu in 10 years? And guys, let me just, before you answer that, feel free to keep calling us with questions for Pedro, for myself. It's again, it's 916-634-9978. As you answer that last question, I'm going to put up a little sign here. Okay.
Okay.
So yeah, where do you see jiu-jitsu?
Well, I think that I know that MMA is the fastest growing sport in America. I know that Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is a huge aspect of that. And I think that it's only going to grow and get bigger and, you know, get more like monetized, and that's going to water it down a little bit. But I think that that's also going to make it so people can make a living. So it's just going to evolve faster and faster and faster, just exponentially faster. And I mean, maybe one day it will be something really weird, like a martial art that doesn't have up like real applications because it's so advanced. And that's just my theory. Well, it's not really a theory, right? A theory is well proven. That's just a really lame hypothesis that I have, you know. But as for right now, I think it's the most beautiful thing it worked up to be, and it's amazing. It's an art. But the pendulum, as my grandma always says, you know, the pendulum swings both ways. And you know, one day it might not be as cool as it is, but you know, yeah, just so much to say about that.
You think the pulling guard in a street fight would? Can you see Mikey? See, Mikey and I got into it a little bit about this. Mike Hothie, if you're listening, we love you.
We do love you. Please call us and
call us for the question. Hear your voice. Mikey's actually out there working hard, making a living. So, but I got into it with Mike. You know, we didn't really get into it. It was a friendly discussion, actually. And I was like, come on, Mike, you wouldn't really pull guard in a street fight, would you? And he was like, yeah, I would. It's effective. People don't know what the fuck they're doing on the ground. You mean to tell me, like, if you take down someone that doesn't know anything about what they're doing on the ground, that they're going to be able to hang with you? And I was like, yeah, I mean, come on, you know. But I was like, come on, like, you don't know if he's got buddies behind the bush coming to get you. You know, I feel like in a true martial arts spirit, you shouldn't even have to get dirty.
Well, and think about that road rash on your back, messing up your new clothes. You know, I got fresh ass clothes. I can't be messing these up, man. Looking too fly.
That's a nice shirt. Who makes that?
That's OGA all day. Open Guard Apparel. Shout out to the realist.
Are they a sponsor?
Yes, they are.
Open Guard Apparel. Yep. Okay.
But I think that, you know, judo takedowns, wrestling takedowns, I think takedowns are a part of jiu-jitsu, and it's just, you know, it's not that it's overlooked. For sports jiu-jitsu, it doesn't have that much of an application. You're going to go 5 minutes, and if you take somebody down, it's 2 points. So I can see why you would just pull guard, and it's fucking the most fun thing in the world. But if I was to really fight, you know what I mean? I might just stand up, do a double leg or something like that, or just even like fake a double, like a duck under or take their back or something like that, then take them down with my hooks through the back. But yeah, I'm with you. I wouldn't say that I would just pull guard. You know what I mean? What I'm going to do? Delahiva beating Bolo? It's like,
in a street fight? Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, what if someone else, if somebody's there? What if there's like a curb and I roll over weird over something? You know, I don't know. It just seems too
weird.
Yeah,
or a piece of glass or a nail on it. I mean, I really feel like I really feel like sport jiu-jitsu is deeply damaging the, you know, I think this was Hicks and Gracie again. He got this one right, I think. But he said, you know, like the identity of jiu-jitsu as a fight culture is in jeopardy, you know. You know if you're training people to like kind of sit down to butterfly, you know, and I get, you know, that's almost like grappling theory to me. You know, if I'm going to sit down to butterfly and I'm going to make you attack, okay, but before you do that, you just for your physical safety and well-being, for all around health, for all around athletic purposes, you should know how to throw a punch, you should know how to do a takedown, you should know how to defend a takedown, you should know how to like competently get a take, you know, like shrug a takedown off, maybe get the person off of you and punch them on the way out, you know, I mean, just basic stuff, you know. If you're spending your time just sitting right down to butterfly, I'm sorry, I can't defend that. Like, I just can't defend the direction that jiu-jitsu is going in right now, which is why I've sort of had trouble getting like jazzed up for competitions. Like, I know someone's just going to come and pull guard on me, you know?
So I just have to be really great at passing, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to get better at passing. Sure. I feel like guys like you and Mikey like slow me down, and that really frustrates me. Like, I want to move a lot. Like, I want to move and like try and stay. Like, when you and I rolled the last time we rolled, I felt like, okay, I got to be either all the way in your guard or all the way out. But if I'm kind of like in that middle distance, like you talked about, you know, like you talked about controlling the distance, you're gonna get me. You know, like, that's especially in the gi. You know, your grip game is so strong. Yeah, I didn't want any part of that.
Yeah. And then get people like Davin, who are like really nimble. You know what I mean? And Mikey, of course. But I think they're more so than me, like nimble and flexible in weird ways. That it's like, you might really not pass your fucking guard, man. Mm-hmm. It's like, damn. Like, what am I doing? It's like, yeah, do I really have to sit double guard? And it's like, I hate sitting double guard. It's like, dude, if they're going to sit down, I'm gonna pass. If I sit down, hopefully they're gonna try to pass, you know?
Yeah, Davin, I feel like you have to like, you almost have to like get him to like face you to like favor one hip or the other, and then try and go under the other hip and try and take his back almost, you know? It's you're not gonna like, because when someone can lay their legs flat back, you're not gonna like traditionally pass
wherever you go. There's a foot
that's the worst.
Like, oh man, and he's behind you choking. You're like, dude, what the hell? I thought I was passed.
Yeah.
Nope, I'm sorry. Try again.
So he's your main instructor? Right
him
now?
And his dad.
Him and his dad. Yeah. Terry Maxwell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I gotta go drop in there actually and just do a class with them.
Mondays and Wednesdays at 11, man. Mikey said the same thing. So if you guys came up, it'd be really cool. I'm just about to finish up the semester in school, so I should be there, you know.
Oh, really?
There's showers there, which is really cool.
It's right off. It's right off. Sutterville. Right by Sac City, right?
Yep, across the street from Hughes Stadium. Yep. And I mean, Manny's kind of my instructor too. Manny Gonzalez from Half Gracie, you know.
Yeah.
I took a little hiatus. I was training there for a while, and you know, he shows me a lot of fucking cool shit too. Same with Johnny. You know, he heel hooks the shit out of me. Whatever.
Yeah. So yeah. No, you know that.
Learn a lot.
That open mat that Manny runs up in Natomas is like a great institution for the. Is a great institution for the grappling community in Sacramento.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so many new people there. And it's just like, oh, hey, you know, it's like.
And it's consistent, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I wonder how people would feel about like a, maybe like a once a month, like Sacramento BJJ, like happy hour or something like that. Like just meet those people off the mat. Get everybody together. Because there's so many, like there's
really cool.
Yeah, there's like that, there's like that purple belt dude that comes in with his girlfriend. There's Heather. Viarta, I think her name is. There's you, there's me. Kenny's always there. Mikey's always there. My buddy Gabe's always there. I always thought to myself, man, I'd love to like get all these people like together. You know, everyone seems
see what everyone's like off the mat.
See what everyone is like off the mat. Like everyone seems so cool, you know. Although there are some people that don't seem particularly cool too. There's like this this one Russian guy that like kind of pouts every time that I tap him. I don't know if you big guy, big like Russian. Purple belt, kind of a little bit of a belly. He gets like real upset when I tap him. I was like, bro, you know, I don't know if you realize
this is jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, it's also kind of like want to humble yourself, also kind of massively disrespectful to the guy that you just, you know.
Fucking A, you put more work than him. That's why you fucking tapped him, right?
It's right,
like,
yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If you really feel that bad about it, defend your ass off, you know? It's like,
yeah. I hate that. So how old were you when you started training?
I was 19. I had just graduated from high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
What got you into it? Like, what'd you...
My friends were all doing Muay Thai, and one of my friends was a general manager at a Kovars on Riverside, my friend Alex Cardoso, and him and our friends would train Muay Thai all night after hours, like 12 o'clock at night. We would come in there and just have hella fun, and I would just watch him do Muay Thai. I was totally not interested. And after we would play dodgeball games, and that was like the light of my whole summer after I graduated. But after a while, I got bored watching him do Muay Thai, and I was like, hey, can you teach me something? And he showed me how to do an arm bar and a triangle from closed guard. And that just kind of blew my mind. I was like, wow, this thing is really cool. I just felt so restricted to striking. You know, I had done capoeira growing up. You know, I did some kickboxing. I did Muay Thai. But it was just like always putting together the same combinations. In jiu-jitsu, it was just like, it's like so freeing, so liberating, you know. But also you can't punch, so that's kind of a double, you know, double edge. But don't know. Yeah, he just got me into it, got me doing that, and we did that all summer, and I was like, dude, I need to sign up at a real place because this is awesome. And then we walked over to Ultimate Fitness on 16th Street, checked that out, and it was okay, but I also wanted to go check out Andre Cipollista because I remember I had heard about it. And I went there, and Andre just off the bat was really cool to me, like just overly nice. I think it was maybe because we're both like Polish descent,
Polish Brazilians.
Yeah.
How'd so many Polacks wind up in Brazil?
I think because Brazil was just very open to everybody after the war, you know what I mean? Okay. And they've always been. I think we also have like the second biggest colony outside of Japan, second biggest Japanese colony outside of Japan. So there's just a huge mixed pot. Talk about a melting pot, right?
Justin Smith just called you the best person he knows, hands down.
Hey, Justin. That's my dog. That's my dog. I don't know about all that though. You probably know a lot of good people.
Oh, you know who some Cipollista alumni too is Brandy Ross and Neho Burnett, who just gave us a thumbs up here.
Yeah, they're awesome people. Shout out to you guys, Brandy.
Neho and I are overdue for a role. I'm actually not sure where Neho is training nowadays, but I gotta drop in. Or Neho,
Neho and Brandy. Wernix.
Does he?
Yeah.
Okay. I've never been there. I've never been to Fabio Prado's. I've never been to Elliot's.
See, I've never been to Elliot's, and I've been to Cassia once. I would love to go to Elliot's school. Seems very cool. Fabio, I've trained with him a few times. He was always super receptive to me, and I thought that was really cool. It's like I'm kind of a nobody, and it's like he's just like, hey, yeah, come train. Let's do this. You know, just beat the hell out of me a little bit.
Yeah, very
cool dude.
Yeah, Andre was actually pretty cool to me when I first started, but he gave me one of the most disappointed looks I've ever received when he had taught like a very like proper sweep, and I was still a white belt, I was still trying to put it together, and my background was wrestling, and so he teaches this like really like prim and proper type of sweep, and you're supposed to use the move that he showed, right? And so we're in free rolling, and I'm underneath this guy in full guard. It's time to do the sweep. I can't do it. And so I just kind of like put my feet on his hip and kind of like push him off and go in for the double leg, and like sweep the guy that way. And he just looked at me like, oh, yeah, what am I going to do with this kid? And I looked at him like, what? That shit works.
It's 2 points.
It's 2 points. Put it on the board. 2 points.
Yep.
I'm the king of the mat. But yeah, he was actually pretty patient with me because I was having trouble understanding the etiquette, So, you've got a competition coming up here soon.
Yeah, I signed up for that, the Fight to Win in Sacramento on January 12th.
Okay. Yeah. Who are you fighting?
I'm Chuy Moreno, Manny Moreno's brother.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, another Cipollista alumni.
He is another Cipollista alumni. Yeah. Chuy, dude, I haven't seen Chuy in a while. He's actually a beast at Muay Thai.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quick-ass feet.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I don't know who to root for because I actually like both those guys.
Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah. Mikey has a fight, too.
I saw that. Very cool. A lot of very like local guys got that, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I thought that was cool too. I might lobby for a spot on it too. We'll see how I feel. I'm trying to focus on like getting bigger and stronger right now though. What are you doing for yourself to get ready for it? I know we covered this a little bit, but
I think just kind of staying ready. Since I've started training, the goal has been to be a world champion, Abu Dhabi champion, Pan American champion. And I haven't won any of those, but that is the ultimate goal, So I've just always been gearing my whole life since I've started towards that. It's like I gave up on social relations, whatever, everything, So I think just trying to stay ready. And again, one thing that I learned that I didn't do a lot of when I first started is resting. It's like, obviously you don't want to fucking hang out at home all day resting, But if you train really hard one day, it's like maybe rest the other or just do drilling, and then train the next day.
Your body can't handle it. You don't have to redline it.
You don't. And again, it takes your body like time to recover. You need ATP, right? You need that. If your body's recovering, you're not going to be as strong.
Yeah. Hey, can I ask you a favor and ask you to just talk a little bit more directly into the mic?
Sorry.
All good, brother. Let me tell you something about recovery. I've been having some, I've been having some weird pins and needles in my chest, and anything to do with the chest, the doctors get real concerned about because your lungs and your heart are in your chest. Sure. So any sort of feeling in your chest, they send you, if you go to the emergency room and then you say, I got chest pains, you go right to the front of the line. They don't fuck around with that. And so they were like, you know, you're probably just stressed. You're probably just stressed and anxious. So, because they did all these tests on me, they couldn't find anything, right? So I was like, I don't know. This feels kind of real. They're like, yeah, no, no shit. Your mind can do this to you. And they're like, so, you know, one thing we need you to do is to cool it on the coffee drinking. No more than one cup. So, like, last week at one point, I was like, all right. Like, 2 days, I just had, like, half a cup. And, like, since then, I haven't had more than, like, 3/4 or, like, the whole cup, you know. But down from, like, 3 or 4, you know. I'm actually getting to bed.
Nice.
I'm actually falling asleep.
Do you, like, bite your nails at all or anything like that?
No, I don't bite my nails, but I'm always kind of maybe, like, tapping.
A little fidgety. Yeah, same
fidgety
here.
Fidgety or something like that, you know.
Love coffee.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I would get to the point where I'd have, like, my last cup of coffee at, like, 4 in the afternoon. Of course I can't fall asleep.
It's
going
to be hard to sleep, yeah.
Yeah, you know. So now I'm just having the 1 in the morning. And even the 1 in the morning I'm having, like, after I wake up. So, I, like, my body knows to wake up on its own. It's going to want to be dependent on it. Let me tell you, I've had, like, the best sleep in years, these last 3 days.
Cool.
Slept amazing, you know. Also, when my parents came for, well, my dad and his family, you know, came for Thanksgiving. And I had everyone in the house. Let me tell you, they bug the hell out of me. They annoy me to no end. I love them, but, you know, it's annoying to have people in
your family, right?
Yeah, can't live with them, yeah, can't live without them. Yeah, no, I love them. Exactly. Can't live with them, can't live without them. Love them to death, though. I slept so well when they were in the house. I was like, I just felt like protected. Like, I got my clan here. You know what I mean? There was a reporter who, There's a reporter who was talking about how he was embedded with the military. He went to Afghanistan, you know, and he, like, covered what it's like to be a Marine in one of these forward operating bases. And, I mean, he was in danger for his life too, you know. I mean, the bomb drops on the whole base, everyone dies, right?
That's right.
But he was like, it's the best sleep I ever got, you know, because I felt like I was, like, with my crew. I was with
camaraderie, right?
Yeah, I had that camaraderie. Like, even though I didn't have a gun myself, like, I knew those guys weren't going to let anything happen to me. And I was, like, with my people, we had a purpose. And that just lends itself to very good, like, rest. You know what I mean?
I think that ties in very well to that whole instructor in different school type thing too, right? Where when you have that brotherhood, that, like, alliance, it's so much easier to train there. You feel comfortable. You don't feel like you're walking on needles, right? It's like you're with, yeah, your friends hanging out. It's almost like, I don't have to go to training. I'm not going to go to work. I'm going to go hang out with my friends, you know, do a little bit of training. And it, as a consequence of that, I'm going to get better.
Absolutely.
Wow, how cool is that?
Absolutely.
You know, I just wish that for everybody. It's like, you know, I hope that wherever you train at, he's like, you feel at home, man. And
that's
that people
the thing
like
too.
You and you're
that's,
accepted.
That's the thing too. Actually, we should talk a little bit about this, because there have been, you've seen folks that kind of, like, switch up academies in the middle of their careers. And
I've switched a lot of times, but yeah.
Yeah. I want to tell people, don't feel shy about that. If it's something that you feel that you need to do, you know, maybe you and your instructor just don't click for whatever reason. Doesn't mean you're a bad guy or he's a bad guy or she's a bad, you know, a bad instructor or whatever. It just means
it's different styles.
You
right?
might just
different
have different styles, different philosophies, and you might, you know, or maybe it's something as simple as, like, oh, I moved and the school's across town from me and there's one right here and these are fine people too.
Right.
You
know? It's logistic. And then someone's going to get butthurt. It's like, no, dude, it's, you know, I just had to go.
Yeah. My buddy Ryan just went through that. He's in Vegas.
That's the one that was going for the medical.
Yeah. Yeah. Great guy. Great, great guy. But he, his team, like, moved locations, and they were like, well, of course we expect you to come with us. And he's like, bro, you moved across town. Like, there's another school right here, you know, like, I can't spend 30 minutes, you know. He's got like a 2-hour break in the middle of his day. He's a fucking doctor. He can't spend an hour in traffic. He
puts him in a bad place.
He just,
right?
Doesn't have the time. There's no way, you know. You know, another thing that kind of bothers me too is, like, if you run in and you're trying to just, like, make it on your lunch break, like, this, I got in when I could get in, you know, are you going to look at me funny because I missed the warm up? So you're just going to, like, not shame me and let me do the, and let me jump into the class, you know?
I'm with that.
You know, I don't really enjoy that.
To make it when you can, right?
Yeah. Just make it. Dude, it should be like,
you're paying to go there.
It should be like church. We're just happy to have you.
Yep.
You know, you've gotten a little bit bigger and more muscular in the last year. What are you doing?
I'm majoring in kinesiology, and through all these random coaching books that I've been reading, you know, I've just learned a lot of just random little stuff, like how to progress your body, all that stuff. And I just started weightlifting a little bit, just very basic, like Romanian deadlifts, sumo deadlifts, you know, I do a lot of pull-ups, like do a lot of like leg extensions on a pull-up bar and just that, you know, and along with that yoga.
How do you feel about just like straight up like squats and deadlifts?
I think that it's very good for you. But again, it's like you don't want, you know, all our muscles, they're like strings, you know, they're like rubber bands. And it's like they're going to pull one direction, right? It's like, look at my finger, you know, it's like this tendon broke. So it pulls off a little weird. See if you guys can see it, you know. And it's like if you have muscle weaknesses, yeah, it's like a mallet finger. I was holding on someone's grip and they ripped the grip.
They ripped your tendon off?
Yeah, well, it's just like
this jiu-jitsu game is real, man.
Yeah,
they snapped the tendon off your finger,
or they snapped the tendon in half. Yeah,
is that
stuck in there? You know how sometimes people can do this, but it's like as far as like with the muscular structure, right, if you get your back too strong and your abs and your core is not strong enough, you know, so you're gonna have muscular imbalances. So if you only do squats and you only do deadlifts, it's like you just gotta supplement it with something else, you know?
Yeah.
Just again, it's like a bunch of strings or rubber bands holding onto your body in different directions, and they all have to be equally strong. And it's like if a rubber band is too tight, you know, it's gonna snap. If it's too loose, it's not gonna work
properly.
Right, right.
It's like
right?
If you have like a if you have like a Christmas tree in your living room, you put a like a cable around it, and you only put one cable around it, and it makes it lean to one side. It's not gonna stand upright unless you get another cable and you make it lean to the other side too.
Exactly.
Right? You kind of have some tension there keeping it upright.
Very true. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I just think that it's like if you're doing only deadlifts and squats, it's like maybe just implement it with anything else, it's like planks or whatever, something random. He's like, there's so much good information like out on YouTube. I mean, there's even better stuff in YouTube because YouTube is like panning for gold, right? It's like 90% of the shit on there I wouldn't say it's useful, but you know, if you take your time, you can find so much great information, right?
Yeah. Yeah. As far as actual exercise, you're doing pull-ups as well.
I do pull-ups, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So useful in jiu-jitsu, right?
So yeah.
Doing like a choke, like bringing them in.
Yeah, yeah. I had the beginner's panel, and they asked me like, what actual exercises do you most recommend for people getting started in jiu-jitsu? And I was like, yeah, the pull-up is king, I think, you know? Yeah.
And even if you can't do a lot of pull-ups, just hanging in the beginning, right? Just getting that strength on the tendons and
stuff.
Dude,
just hanging
is
as hard as anything else. Honestly, like the way it hurts here, like in your between your wrist and your forearm, like that pain is real, man. That stuff is really, really hard.
Hell yeah.
That stuff is really, really hard. Bench press, useful exercise from a kinesiology point of view for grappling or not really?
I think bench pressing is effective. I mean, I think it's all as effective as doing a lot of push-ups, though. You know what I mean? It's essentially the same thing. Again, I would never lift a lot of weights just because I got some herniated discs, and you know, I'm trying to really take care of that, but I do some minor bench pressing. I think that this motion is not, you know, people will say like this motion is not useful in jiu-jitsu, but it's like, well, what if I'm stuck in side control like this, right? And it's like, yeah, I'm kind of lifting them with my elbows first, right? But if I'm stuck in side control, I got to hip escape away and then extend. It's like, that's all pecs, right? So
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's all good.
And then just part of that muscular imbalance thing that you're talking about too, is like, you're definitely going to have a naturally strong back after years and years of jiu-jitsu. That you're really gonna have to balance that out, you know, with your shoulders and your chest as well.
Hell yes.
And then also, you know, like it's just a good thing to have to get someone off you. If you even outside of a jiu-jitsu context, it's the get the fuck away from me muscle. You know, it's good for you, I think. Do you still skateboard?
I do. I mean, I don't do it as often. You know, it's kind of like, if I skate, I probably can't train for like 2 days, 3 days, maybe,
really?
Because I'm so sore in different
calves
spots.
Yeah,
my calves and like these weird muscles on my groin. It's like, it's such a good fucking workout, man.
Yeah. Do you like bowls more, like street skating, stairs?
I like street skating better. Just like when I was younger, I used to skate a lot of stairs and rails and just tear myself up. But now that I'm a little bit older, I think about the longevity and I just like skating like boxes and little rails and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I
low impact.
Yeah, I grew up surfing, and then I did a little bit of skating at the, you know, like skate park type skating. I really like bowls though, like
bowls,
little mini ramps, little half pipes. Those are lower impact too, you know. You really get those in your quads.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Really,
and talk about learning how to like maneuver your balance in different ways, right? It's like, oh, your body's going this way. How to kind of off center that? It's like, yeah, I think skateboarding for jiu-jitsu is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? We got another caller.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Bring her in. Her, him or
yo,
him.
Yo, yo.
Yo, yo.
You're alive.
You're alive. You're on the show. Who is this?
What is good? What is good? This is Antoine Joe's buddy from Cassio Wernick Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Shout out to Cassio. Dude, Cassio Wernick is like the godfather of Jiu-Jitsu in Sacramento.
Yeah.
You know, I got to have him on.
Yeah, lightweight. Pretty, yeah, you know. But I just called in because I had a quick question for my brother Pedro. Pedro, what is spiritually, emotionally, what is the most fulfilling aspect of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for you?
All right, I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to get you on here on live, okay?
For sure.
All right. All right, brother. Peace. So the question was, what is the most, like fulfilling, this spiritually fulfilling aspect of jiu-jitsu for me? Honestly, I think it's teaching other people and teaching them how to express themselves.
Give me 1 second here. Hello, we're currently answering a question. Can you call us back in like in two minutes?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, brother. Go ahead, brother.
So, right, the question was what was the most spiritual part of training? I think that's a very, you know, a dumber way to say it with the question. The way he put it was awesome. But I think that the best thing for me, I think it's teaching other people. It's teaching them how to, again, how to express themselves, because it's like dancing. You know what I mean? You find out what your style is, and for sports jiu-jitsu, it's like, yeah, you can just sit on your butt if that's your style, and that's totally cool. If it's sports jiu-jitsu, it's like, do that. You know what I mean? And I get like, my heart just fills up with joy when I show someone a move and they do it. Or sometimes if they do it, even if it's their own version of it, it's like, wow, that's really cool. You know?
Yeah, teaching's a powerful thing. It's like, you know, what do they say? Like, you're, you know, like man is noble when he plants trees that he'll never see the shade of, you know, it's like the, like giving back to the
thing about the future, right? Not about yourself. Very cool.
Not about yourself. Right. Like I love to see someone that I like showed a couple moves to like come back and try and use it on me. And
hell yeah, especially hit it on me. That's really cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, then I mean, they
I
light
don't
up.
Know how to feel. I don't even know how to feel. That was my move, you know?
But just the joy that they get too, I think it just rubs off on me. Just seeing someone get excited about being physically fit. And it's not just about jiu-jitsu. It's about doing any kind of sport. You know, if someone's been stagnant their whole lives and they get into jiu-jitsu, you know, or if they get into soccer and that's what they're into, I just like seeing people being happy doing what they want to do. And again, it's all about self-expression, I think.
Yeah, you know, the other thing, honestly, for me about jiu-jitsu is in terms of spiritually and like emotional balance, is like when you know, I was talking about this with Cambie Brown. She was on my other podcast, on my Sacramento based podcast. But you know, she was saying like, God, you know, like people just don't have hobbies like they used to. And you know, for, you know, 99% of us are going to have like a job and a hobby, jiu-jitsu, right? And you know, for me, what I found really, really fulfilling about jiu-jitsu is like it kind of keeps you anchored. Like when you're surfing, you have to look at something on the shore to know where you are relative to the shore, because you can't look at the other water because it's not a fixed point. And everyone else in the water is not a fixed point either. They're floating with the current. So you need to like line something up, like, oh, I'm in front of that house. And then you'll see if you went too far to the left or too far to the right, and you want to be like in front of that house, right? And by having like a hobby that you dedicate yourself to, that's kind of like the house in your life. It's like, all right, maybe, you know, my personal relationships aren't doing so good right now. But if I just kind of keep working at things, everything will work out. Or, oh, maybe professionally I'm kind of not where I would want to be. Okay, well, you know, if I just kind of put my head down and do the work, it'll be okay. Just like it is, just like I was not particularly talented at jiu-jitsu, but if I just put my head down and do the work, I kind of kept going, you know?
Very cool.
So I think that it, like, it's really useful to sort of have something to ground yourself when other areas of your life are going right, or even if they're going right, even if it's, you know, if things are going really well and you're like super successful, it's good to humble you, because there's always going to be a bigger fish in the sea. There's always going to be someone to come and do like a full neon belly on you and just buck you up, frankly, you know? And so, you know, for me, that's been one thing that's been super spiritually fulfilling. The other one is when you get good, and not everyone is going to feel this way, but when you get good enough at jiu-jitsu where you can do it without thinking, It's like you're asleep almost.
In a trance, yeah. Yeah. Talk about finding that flow, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's see if we can get this guy here.
Totally. See if we got more questions on here. See if some people called. But honestly, there's so many great things about jiu-jitsu. It's like it's fulfilling in so many ways.
Yeah.
You know, I think sometimes I don't think about how fulfilling it is until after I get home. It's almost like writing a really good essay and realizing that you didn't write that much of an essay. But it's after you're done and after you turn it in that you do most of the reflection, where most of the learning settles and you're like, oh, shit, I didn't think about this. But I think that was your teacher's job. And I think rolling is kind of like that sometimes. Like you're not – it's not until after you get home and even after you get over thinking like, oh, I got my ass kicked today. It's like, well, what really happened today? And you get to reflect on like mistakes or what you did right, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I just like that too, the tinkering with that and just really honing your craft, always thinking about that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Hey, so you came to the U.S. when you were young. Do you still have family in Brazil?
I do. I have a lot of family in Brazil.
Do you go home and visit?
I've only been back like twice since I've been here in 10 years. Yeah, it's kind of lame, but
so it's almost like you don't even get to know any of those. Like you got like the whole lineage just got to start over.
Yeah, yeah. Got cut a lot of little cousins that were just born, but we always keep up. You know, that's a great thing about the internet. I think is that it allows you to be connected with someone who's so far away. You know, I just hope that maybe one of my aunts is watching. You know, maybe she can understand a little bit of it.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I think that's you know the beauty of the internet is it just puts you together with people. You know, there's so many bad things about it too, but there's so much good with it, you know.
Yeah,
you disconnects know, us in a lot of ways, but it also if you use it wisely, it can just connect you, and I think that's very useful.
Yeah, you know, it certainly brought me closer to my family. My mom and I just chat on Facebook Messenger a lot more than we would just call each other on the phone.
Convenient, right?
It's so convenient. Yeah, it's like, hey mom, look at this, what do you think of this, you know? Or like, and then my sister too, you know. My sister has been like the number one promoter of the podcast. She's so awesome to me. And then like, my dad too, it's like, I'll chat with him online. Like, hey, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? You know, here we go.
Supportive parents are the best, man. Shout out to all my parents right out here.
What's up? You're live on Life in Jiu-Jitsu.
Hey, what's up?
Who are we chatting with?
JV, man. I used to be, Pedro's former team at Team Maxwell.
Hey.
What's up, Pedro?
What's going on, dog? Hell yeah, man.
Very cool.
Congratulations on your purple belt.
Oh, thanks, brother. Thanks, man. Hell yeah.
You got a question?
Hey, Pedro, man, thanks for being a great inspiration to all of us, man. I really appreciate you. And thanks for everything you've done, man.
Hell yeah, dude.
One thing I wanted to ask, man, I always wanted to ask, you know, I know you compete a lot, or maybe you had side matches, but what was like the most memorable match you had that always stuck with you?
All right, brother, we're gonna answer your question on the air.
Later, dog.
Later, brother.
So the question was most memorable match. Well, I have a few, but the most memorable match, I would say it was against Jeremy Jackson at the last fight to win. I got my ass kicked by him really fast, you know. I just went in there, and it was my first time fighting at an event like that. And for you guys that compete jiu-jitsu, you know, it's like when there's eight mats spread out, you know, it's almost like a swimming competition. It's like no one's really paying attention to you. There's so much space. Everyone is kind of doing their own thing, you know. There's eight mats going, probably eight fights going on at that time. You know, there's not that much attention focused on you. But at that fight to win thing, man, I totally, you know, the lights got to me. And I mean, it wasn't just that. Obviously, my opponent came out with a win. He was more skilled that day. But, you know, I think that, man, that was my most memorable match. Just getting my ass kicked in front of everybody that I love, it was just very hurtful to me. But it was very, you know, it just built me up a lot, I think.
That's brutally honest, man.
Yeah, you know, but it's like climbing a ladder, right? If I fall down and break my arm, but it's like if I have to get through that ladder, it's like, fuck, I'm going to have to keep going, you know, even with a broken arm, or rest, heal the arm, and then climb back up.
Yeah, that's super honest. I would have expected you to maybe like talk about a match that you won.
Nah. You always forget winning, right? And it's like if you win a tournament, it's like don't let it get to your head. You know, you just remember the
losses.
Yeah, exactly. I think win or lose, you need to keep everything in perspective because the goal is not ultimately to win. That's not, you know what I mean. I think that's a misconception. If your goal is only to win at things, it's like you might not get very far in life. I think the goal is improving yourself, setting personal goals, setting team goals, and then following through with them. Because if you're worried about that, I think that you would just hit all – you will win as a consequence of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. You know, like don't think about winning. Think about what you need to do to win.
Exactly. Think about your performance. Like, well, what can I do to make myself better today? If you're just thinking about winning and you're already winning, it's kind of like, oh, well, I'm winning. I can just keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah,
like if you win and you're like, well, what can I do to make myself better? It's like, yeah, I won. Well, what can I do to win maybe better next time or something? I don't know. You know, just there's so much – so many working parts, many things to work on.
Not particularly
all the time.
Healthy to like fixate on the victories.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
you know who's actually an inspiration on that topic for me is Dominic Cruz. He, I don't know if you follow MMA that much or not, but
a little bit.
Yeah,
he fought like a lot of the alpha male guys. Right? He fought got, really ripped lats.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, he's a character, man. He talked a lot of shit to Cody No Love and got handed to himself. He came back from two knee surgeries. Like he had one knee surgery, spent a year rehabbing it, was ready to come back, and then snapped the other one.
Fuck.
Yeah. And then he came back after like 3 years and fought one fight and then tore his groin. You know, I mean, just like his body, like his body just doesn't really want to fight, you know, but he's good at it. He's a UFC champion. So after 4 years and after coming back, they ask him, hey man, is this the happiest night of your life? You know, you got the championship back. And he's like, no, the happiest night of my life was when I realized I didn't need this belt to be happy.
Very cool. Very deep.
Yeah.
Like chills. Look at that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Dominic Cruz, I know we're not supposed to like him because we're alpha male or whatever, but I must confess, I do like the guy.
I respect him as a fighter.
You know, he also said, you know, he has this other like quote, you know, you can be a host to God or a hostage to your own ego. And this kind of means like you can either humble yourself and accept what comes or just be totally like brought down by your own ego, you know. And so what you just said, like you have to remember the losses, man. Just getting your ass kicked in front of your whole family, that's real.
Yeah,
you know, that's very real.
Well, and you can't fixate on the loss, right? You just got to think about, you know, whatever reason he's lost is like it's your fault and their fault. There's so many working parts to that, but it's like, yeah, just what can you do to make yourself better? You know what I mean? Every day, all the time.
Absolutely. All right, brother, we're at a little bit over an hour. Last thoughts. Anything else you wanted to cover that we haven't covered?
I don't know. I feel like we covered so much already.
Yeah,
but
I feel like that's pretty good.
Before we end, I just want to say, you know, just thank you to everybody that I get to work with. You know, it much like that Isaac Newton quote, if I've seen further, it's because I've stood on the shoulder of giants, and that couldn't be more true. You know what I mean? I've had great instructors throughout my career. I've had great training partners, you know, and together, you know, we're all natives, you know, there's not a chief to this tribe. We're all here together, man. And, you know, we grow and learn from each other. And thank you. Thank you to my sponsors. Thank you to Open Guard Apiro. Thank you to the Jiu-Jitsu Shop. Thank you to Cloud9 Tattoo. And thank you to Boyle 710 for making these edibles, man. Because, you know, smoking sucks when you have to train a lot.
I didn't know you're an edible guy.
I love edibles, man.
No shit.
And the tinctures, all that.
What is a tincture? I just had someone message me about they do tinctures. And I just had someone message me saying they do tinctures and they want to come on the podcast.
I saw that they're like sublingual tinctures. It's like
what is that?
It's like a drops. It's like really concentrated, like drops of
how
like
high
liquid.
Does that get you?
It gets me pretty lit at times.
Really?
Yeah, it's definitely like nighttime, like R&R. You know what I mean? If I'm just chilling, resting, recovering.
If you do the tincture, do you stay high for like a really long time?
Yeah,
like the edible.
Just to eat it. I think once you eat it, you get it's like delta Delta 11, like hydrocannabinol, it's just a totally different effect. I mean, it hits your spinal cord first, I believe.
Oh, my God. That can be good, hitting your spinal cord.
Well, yeah. I mean, it just is stronger. It lasts longer. And, I mean, yeah, I think that it's wonderful. I think that smoking for athletes, it can hinder your game. Yeah. No, and thinking about all the carbon you're inhaling, you know what I mean? Our lungs are supposed to exhale carbon. So it's like if you're just inhaling extra carbon, I don't know. That can't can't be good. I'm not sure what it does, but it can't be good.
I can't smoke the new shit, man. The last time I smoked must have been in high school. I cannot smoke this new powerful shit.
Well, they
shit,
have like 26% THC. It's weaponized. By now, they probably have even more. Yeah, it's like, what?
What the fuck? No, I need them to bring back the Mexican dirt weed. I can't smoke the new shit, man. It's way too powerful. I'm an old man. I almost complained to the gym. I was like, guys, the smell of marijuana here, not super friendly to everybody, people can't go back to work smelling like weed.
Well, yeah, that's actually true. See, I don't think about that sometimes, and it's not like I don't want to be like, oh, I'm advocating for everyone to smoke weed. I'm just saying that, we're people, we all have our own things. Just like I eat clean, it's like I believe in that. I believe weed has, helped me, benefited me a lot. Just in my way of thinking too, just different abstract.
You feel like it helps you
thinking.
Chill out, or
yeah, a lot. Yeah, that's probably why I'm so talkative right now, because I'm not lit.
Next time you're invited, as long as you don't blow it in my direction, you're invited to come up and smoke. All right?
Hey, it's a party.
It's a party. Yeah. So and folks, do me a favor and comment like kind of what sort of direction you guys want to see this be brought in. And you know what? Let me do a quick shout out myself. My biggest, folks might not know this, because I think the biggest single audience I have is on the Facebook page, but the audio only podcast is wherever you find the podcast. So it's on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, anywhere and everywhere that you get your podcast, you can get the audio only version. So if you like to drive and listen to podcasts or whatever, this is a podcast first and foremost. The single biggest audience that I have for the podcast, most of my downloads are actually coming from Japan.
Wow, that's very cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Shout out to you guys out there, Japan. Osaka, Tokyo, man. If you guys ever want to hang out with us in Sacktown, you got to
train. If you guys ever want to Skype in, for the folks in Japan, I would hope Team Alpha Male in Japan is listening. Folks, leave a comment. Let us know. Do you like this live Q&A type of format? Do you like the fight preview breakdowns and analysis? Do you like more of like a serious discussion? Do you like the panels? Let us know where we can take this. Where can folks find you on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook?
My name on Facebook is just Pedro Silva, and you can see a picture of me up there with my horns up and my crazy hair. And on Instagram, my name is PSilva75KG.
Very cool.
Let me just say one more thing, though, real fast. We're talking about the whole weed thing, and it's like, just like everything else in my life, it's super methodical. You know what I mean? If you want to do something, don't take people's words for it. Look it up. Respect the research. Research, research, research. You know what I mean? I remember I was in an astronomy class, and I learned that the guy who invented the theory of elasticity and who coined the term the cell, John Hooke, he was a huge advocate for weed. And this is even before I ever smoked, But so when someone tells you something's good or something's bad, you be the judge of it. You make up your own mind of what something is good or bad.
Hey, that's pretty good advice for life in general. Open Guard Apparel, where can folks find Open Guard Apparel?
You guys can find Open Guard Apparel on Instagram at Open Guard Apparel, and they also have a Facebook. Yep, and they're super active with their stuff. They're always coming out with really new, cool stuff, and I'm just honored, super honored to be a part of it. Just super honored to have the support of them and the community.
Very cool, very cool. All right, brother.
Thank you.
It's been real.
Thank
you.
Bruh.